now, you're tuned into RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dobb, along with my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, baseball is back.
Baseball is back. Yes. I can't believe we finally made it. It's felt like an excruciatingly long offseason. But now we've got to watch some real baseball games that have real results and consequences. And oh my goodness, on Friday, oh my gosh, what a treat it was to sit down and watch a pure Rays win in the way that I've always watched the Rays win, where they don't score for six innings and then manage to come back and walk it off.
There was a great stat somebody put up, or I think it was on the broadcast on, I think it was yesterday's game, because we had come back on Friday, where we were like number two in all of MLB in comeback wins last year. And in a way like that, some of it's luck and some of it's just that we have good players. Some of it's the way we have designed this roster. We have good hitters. Not all of them are like world beaters. We have excellent pitching, and excellent pitching will always keep you in the game. And then you get your chances against relief pitching, which is very hit and miss, and you win some games. And we're here to talk about all of it. We're going to talk about the first two games that have been some unfortunate happenings during those games that we kind of have to break down and talk about what the future might look like. Overreactions and underreactions, it's all going to be here. Jam-packed show. We're so excited to have all of you here. If this is your first time watching, do us a huge favor and drop us a like if you enjoyed the show. But, you know, you don't really have to do that. We just want you to be here and enjoy the show, because this is for you. We're really excited to get into the season. So we're going to start it out with a little preseason talk. We're going to go back before the season began, talk a little bit about the opening day roster. I don't know. I wouldn't say there were some surprises, maybe some unexpected moves. I think the two that we didn't expect as much to be on the opening day roster, and one of them is because of an injury, and that's the fact that Palacios is not on the opening day roster because he has an injury. It's not expected to be long-term, but in his place, we got Cameron Meisner. And then Curtis Meade makes the opening day roster over an Eloy Jimenez, over anybody else. So a little surprised about Meisner, but Meade makes the roster kind of as we expected.
Yeah. Meade definitely was going to earn his way onto the roster after such a good spring. I guess the surprise that comes with that is that Eloy actually accepted his minor league assignment, which I don't think many predicted would be the case. He started to get a little bit better on the back half of spring training, so we thought, oh, he could probably parlay that into a major league deal with maybe one of the lesser teams like a Marlins or White Sox. But no, he was more than happy to stick around. He said he loved it. He loved his time in spring training with the Rays, is happy to go to Durham and is motivated to kind of get up with the big league team because he liked the culture and the way he was treated so much. I guess we should add it to the folder of evidence of the Rays are a top class organization that, despite all reports, really look after their players and make them feel welcome and appreciated and, you know, have their best interests at heart. So big ups to Eloy, and he's got off to a great start. He's only played a couple of games down in Durham, but he's 5-for-9 far for the Bulls. Drove in quite a few runs already, so maybe he might be on the bus to Steinbrenner Field sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and I think we're going to get into this. The injuries that have happened to start the season, now like more so than ever, there is some murkiness with the roster. There's some, well, I don't know who's going to be up, who's going to be down. We currently have two outfielders up that I would not have expected to be up. So there's a lot of questions right now, I think, that have not yet been answered. And it will be interesting to see. I think the key for Eloy is, I made a joke about him starting running a little bit, get some cardio in, because I think if he can find a way to play the outfield, I think there's a spot for him right now. So we're going to get into the reason, unfortunate reason why, but I think there is a spot for him right now at the major league level if he can play some outfield. But it's cool to see that he, you know, we've talked about it so many times, and I think the perception has shifted a little bit. I think people are kind of coming off of that the Rays are terrible and they underplayed their players and they're bad. Yet you're absolutely right, Eric. Eloy has been lining it up in Durham, and we hope that he can, you know, kind of continue that and get into the outfield a little bit, because I think if he continues that level of play, he can be a difference maker at the MLB level for this team, because the power is there. Whatever else might be going on with him as far as bat-to-ball skills, the power is there and there's value there.
Definitely. He's locked in. And I guess the only other kind of late addition to the roster was obviously Shane McClanahan went down in his last spring training start. Yes. When you and Carter were talking, I believe he was still getting his diagnosis. He was still getting imaging. Yes. Done, but we are proud to report, I suppose, that it was as good a news as you can get from that, which is right. That he's got some nerve irritation, which means he's just going to get shut down for a couple weeks, maybe 2-3 weeks, but he's not expected to miss more than like a month, barring any complications. Yes. Which is like the lightest possible scenario, considering the way he left the field and how he looked and yes. how that all went down. We thought, oh god, get ready to hear forearm tightness, get ready to hear elbow stuff, which is super scary when a guy's coming back from Tommy John, especially his second, because you don't want yeah. it to be a third, because that's very rare that you can come back from that. But it looks like it's as light an injury as you could possibly get given the circumstances, and he should be back come May time.
Yeah, and the what we kind of talked about in the last episode is that this roster, as it is constructed, is built to handle a short absence of a starter. A long-term mm-hmm. absence, like what we were afraid of maybe was possibility, is not really – any team is really constructed super well for that. But this team is built to withstand that. So you may see some Ian Seymour. You may see some Joe Rock. That may happen. But those are fine. Those are fine guys to get starts at the major league level, at least for one or two. It would be a concern if we were saying – all right, Joe Boyle, time to figure it out. Let's get you up yeah. there and figure it out, kid. We just traded, you know, Jeffrey Springs, who had a great opening day start for you. So it's time for you to figure it out. And luckily, the team is built in such a way that that's not necessary. We can rely on the rest of the starting staff. We can help. We can hope that Drew can, you know, extend out maybe some of his outings and give us the 5-4 innings that we need, and rely on that bullpen, at least in the short term, while we're waiting for Shane to get back, which hopefully will be sooner than later.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, all indications are the Rays were going to go with that 5.5-man rotation that we've been talking about a couple weeks ago. But with McClanahan out, they're like, okay, we'll just go back to the traditional 5-man for now, especially with like guys like Fiedo out. So, and that was kind of told in their replacement. Hunter Biggie made the roster.
Yes.
In McClanahan's absence, which is, you know, a guy that will pitch one inning out of the bullpen usually. So it looks like they're just going to run with a traditional 5-man rotation for now. Rasmussen will step into that fifth spot as opposed to that kind of half spot that we predicted he would get.
Yeah. Anything else on the roster that interested you before we get into the games?
I guess there was a decision that needed to be made. I mean, about Chandler Simpson, it was kind of made. Yeah. Couple weeks ago, but they could have feasibly called him up. But they didn't, and that's fine. I guess when they reassigned him to minor league camp, I think they still predicted that Palacios was going to be on the roster. But yes. You know, the decision to have Meisner has already paid off.
Yeah. Yep. And let's get right into it, actually, because game one of the 2025 MLB season for the Tampa Bay Rays was a 2-1 win, thanks to the late game heroics of Cameron Meisner, who was brought into the game by a very unfortunate injury to Josh Lowe. And that's the story of this opening day game. Is first off, Pepiot was good to start, only allowed the two runs, and they were, you know, there was a couple of hard hit balls off of him, but he looked really, really good. 8 strikeouts to start, 6 innings pitch, which I really like to see. The bullpen looked elite behind him. Mason Montgomery looked great. Fairbanks looked great. Just an elite showing for the bullpen. And the hitters looked befuddled to start the game versus Kyle Freeland, which, you know, you might have been able to see coming because, you know, Freeland has kind of an odd arm angle. And when he's not pitching in Coors, he's been pretty good throughout his entire career. But he just had the Rays on the ropes the entire game. Thank you to Bud Black for the assist, taking him out in the sixth when he had like 70 pitches. He could have easily gone to the seventh or the eighth, but it took him out. The Rays get to the bullpen. get a run before the ninth, and then Meisner walks it off after he gets an unexpected opportunity, makes the most of it, sits a fastball, first pitch he saw, sent it over the right field wall, the short porch, but it actually would have been a home run in 20 parks. So not a Mickey Mouse home run. Super fun start to the season, even though it was a little frustrating for the first couple of innings, watching them try to fight through Freeland. That kind of has a weird taste in your mouth at the end, because now we've got questions about the outfield.
Yeah. It was a weird old game. It felt very Raysy. It felt like we were watching a 2024 Rays game, where a starter that's good, but is vulnerable at times, completely dominant, which it feels like we were saying all the way through 2024, is like these kind of like decent starters, as long as they brought their stuff, could completely destroy this Rays lineup. Didn't do much to temper our expectations of improvement in that game. We got the first run back, and we tied the game 2-2. And then we had the bases loaded with one out in a tied game. Walls strikes out with the bases loaded when all he had to do was put a ball in play. Curtis Mead then steps up, has a 3-1 count against a reliever that was really struggling for command, decided to swing when he probably didn't need to, at a pitch kind of on the edge of the zone, to ground out to end the inning when he could have walked in a run potentially. I was like, oh, good. I'm glad to see that the Rays with runners in scoring position are still...
Once again.
Yeah. But thank gosh for Cameron Meisner just cheating to that fastball and getting us away without extra innings or anything like that. But the pitching looked great. The pitching, like you said, was really, really good. And Cameron Meisner, the first player in MLB history to hit their first career home run as a walk-off on opening day.
And not to be forgotten, in the lead-up to that Meisner home run was Junior Caminero getting things started and getting that huge double to move Brandon Lau over as well. I mean, I can't say enough about how Junior's looked so far. He looked great in the game yesterday as well. He has been as advertised so far, Junior Caminero has been.
Yeah, really, really good. He's just, if he keeps this up a whole season, then we're going to be looking at an all-star campaign from him. Yeah. He looks brilliant. I also want to give a shout out to Danny Jansen in that game, in the first game. Because he made a really good play in the top of the ninth to kind of dig a ball out of the dirt and throw to nail Mickey Moniak stealing, which was a big swing in that top of the ninth inning, prevent a kind of scary situation where Fairbanks like had the swing and missed off, but was a bit erratic command-wise. So it was good to just erase that base runner straight away. Yes. And that's an underrated play from that game. Considering Jansen isn't really known for his ability to catch runners stealing. He's not known as like a pop time or strong arm guy. He's more of a blocker. So I thought that deserves mention as well.
We're going to get into kind of the concerning part of today's game. And I actually want to ask our audience, if you're listening and you're enjoying the show, hope you are, I want to know what you guys think about this, because it's something we're going to be talking about kind of the rest of the episode. Josh Lowe, oblique, probably out a long time. What do you guys think? If you are enjoying the show, let us know that you're enjoying. You can let us know what you're enjoying by subscribing and following, but also let us know by talking to us a little bit. If you hop over to YouTube, you can make a comment right there on the video that's live, and there's a good chance we're going to see it, and we'd love to kind of get it back and forth going with you guys, because this is something that we're going to be talking about probably for the next couple of months, is the fact that Josh Lowe, he knew it immediately on a swing. Kind of did this with his arm. You could see it immediately. He was frustrated. Managed to get to first. Was actually on a base hit. Oblique. Again, the same issue he had last season. And they are saying that the oblique injury now is worse than it was last season. So now we're talking about 2, maybe 3 months where he is just not available at all. And then when he's available, as we know, obliques linger. So now we're going to be looking at a lesser version of Josh Lowe, probably for the rest of 2025, not what we envisioned for the season from him.
Yeah, this stings for a couple of reasons. One, the outfield was probably our least equipped position to handle any loss. We're pretty thin in the outfield. I think we're swimming in infield and pitching depth, but the outfield, we don't have tons of options. No. So to lose a really key player like Josh Lowe hurts there. But also, yeah, for Josh Lowe's trajectory as a player, I think this really stings. This was a bit of a prove it year for him because his 2023 was so good, but his kind of up and down 2022 and his underwhelming 2024 meant that this year needed to be a prove it year for him to prove that he can be the everyday right fielder for the Rays long term. And part of that was proving that he can stay healthy. And now he's the same issue that plagued his 2024 campaign is back in 2025, but worse. So you got to wonder how Josh Lowe's future is going to project as a major league starter if he can't really recover from this oblique strain, because now the pressure's on for him to, when he does return, show that it won't linger. But that's, I think, an unfair expectation for someone to come off an oblique injury, which means he'll probably not have a good 2025. And then you got to wonder how that projects, how the Rays plan their outfield for 2026 and beyond, and even for the rest of 2025. So, yeah, really sucks for Josh as a guy, stings for the Rays as an organization. To happen on opening day is awful as well. Yeah, and now the Rays are kind of faced with a conundrum on how to approach the right field position going forward for at least the next couple of months. Jake Mangum was the call up, and he's going to be making his first major league start today, which is very exciting.
That's cool.
But is he, for you, the future at right field? Is it Cameron Meisner? Or what do you want the Rays, or what do you think the Rays should do in right field going forward, at least for the next couple of months?
It's tough because when we discussed this position in player previews, in position previews, we spent probably the least time on any position on right field because we said Josh Lowe is it. And part of the other reason for that is there wasn't a whole lot of guys that were knocking at his door to take his spot. And that's where we get into trouble. Meisner has looked great for the first two games. We were kind of talking about this before the show. His ceiling is somewhere in between 2023 Josh Lowe and 2024 Josh Lowe. His floor is below last season from Josh Lowe, if we're just talking about what he is as a player. He could be an MLB rotational outfielder and be perfectly acceptable there. And if you get that from him, I would say for the short term, I'm kind of okay with that because I hope that Morel will kind of continue the performance that he's had so far in these first two games. It's a minuscule sample size. Not even really fair to judge anyone one way or the other on this. But he's looked good to start the season. So he's given me hope that if he can kind of provide some value there that we were concerned about, he can kind of fill in there at least until the All-Star break and until we get to the trade deadline. Because I'm going to be honest with you, if Josh Lowe is out for the rest of the season, at least from a perspective of his being able to play at the level that we expected him as, I feel like we need to go get somebody. And I'm not even sure who it is because really haven't had much time to kind of process the fact that he's going to be out and that we now need to be looking. Because unfortunately, as much as we like guys like Mangum and Meisner, if this team is going to be competing at the level we want them to, I don't know if those guys can be that piece. And even if they are, you know, I think even their best friends would say their potential is rotational outfield piece. Right. And that is nothing to sneeze at. And that is an amazing role that needs to be filled in every MLB team, every World Series team. And they have some value. But I feel like we now have a very obvious hole because before we talked in the season, we were discussing, you know, Josh Lowe's position as if he was going to be providing 800-ish OPS, 20 bombs minimum. Now we're looking at, you know, talking a 750 OPS, we talking 10, 15 bombs, that production has to be replaced. And I don't know if the you know, Meisner, Mangum, maybe Eloy combination can fill that hole. I don't know. And that's where I start to say, I mean, I think we got to look really long and hard at making a move at the deadline. I think we have the prospects to do it. I really do all throughout the org. I think we have the pitching to do it if we have to give up major league ready pitching. I'd rather not, but I think we could absolutely, you know, package a bullpen arm and a bat that we have at the minor league level at a position we already have a strength in, you know, corner infield maybe, or even anywhere in the infield. We have a lot of guys that are really, really good at those positions, and we have MLB guys there now. I think there's got to be a move made by the trade deadline, but I think we'll be fine until then. I think if we don't make any moves at the deadline and we run the outfield as it currently stands about the rest of the year, I don't love it.
Yeah. Eloy Jimenez hasn't played the outfield in like 2 years.
Yeah.
Is there a world that the Rays could have run him out there in right field, considering it's a smaller right field with the short porch, and just pray for a couple months that he can like do a okay job? Or is running him and Morella at the same time too much of a liability defensively?
So I think if you put Eloy out there, you can't play meet at second. You got to play Bilal, who's got some more experience there and has been pretty good there, or you got to play Cabbie at second almost. I don't think you can have I don't think you can have Eloy in right and then meet at second, because you're just going to have too many balls drop, I think, in that scenario. And so I think, you can, but you really have to have somebody at second who can make some – who has the ability to range back a little bit. Or you're going to have to be okay with some balls just getting over Eloy's head and giving up some extra base hits. So I think for the short term, it probably could happen. But again, I just wonder if you do that over a full season, if teams are going to try to take advantage of that, if they're going to try to say, hey, guys, pull it over to right field or push it over to right field, whatever, get it over there because there's a liability over there. And if you the odds are you can find some grass over there. JDL's got great range, so if it veers towards center, I think it's probably okay. But it definitely gets it becomes even more so on the pitchers to not allow fly balls if you can. And unfortunately, we've got a lot of our starting pitchers are fly ball pitchers.
Yeah, is there? Lots of people are going to ask this. And I'm going to ask it as well. Chandler Simpson?
So here's the thing. There are two wolves inside of me. There's the wolf that says Chandler Simpson right now. And there's the wolf that says he's not ready yet. He needs time to cook in Durham. And they're fighting every day. And they have fought no more than when the injury happened to Josh Lowe. Because it was – if you were to get into the RBLR Rays chat, probably 5 minutes after the injury was announced, the first words out of my mouth were, I want Simpson up if it's any lengthy, loss of Josh Lowe. And the truth is, I don't know if he's actually ready. As much as I was campaigning for him, I think the best thing for his long-term development is probably to be in Durham. But I would love to see it if they announce tomorrow that Simpson was coming up. I'd hold a miniature parade. I'd be excited, because all you have to do is look at Durham last night. Chandler Simpson gets on first. I think I can't remember if he was a walk or a single. He gets to first, steals second, steals third, overthrow. It's a run. He just provides he can get you instant offense. Now, obviously, some of that, when you are up against major league catchers and major league fielders, that may not always get that lucky, but he has the potential to provide instant offense and put incredible pressure on a pitching staff when you know you've got a guy like that running around behind you. And he's more than capable of doing the defensive things we need him to do. He can play center, JDL can shift over, or vice versa. I want to see him up personally, but I'm not sure. But I think the Rays would rather let him cook in Durham a little bit longer. I think that was made pretty evident by the fact that Mangum was brought up yesterday.
Yeah, I think what they're secretly banking on is that Palacios will spend the minimum on the IL.
That's true.
And he will be our right fielder, occasionally relieved by Meisner or Magnum.
I think because Palacios was hurt for so much of last year, and he's hurt again to start the season, he continues to slip my mind. Because... Yeah. I got to rethink my whole take I just had, because Palacios is pretty good. Like, I really like Palacios. Like, if you're going to tell me Palacios is going to be the starting left fielder when he's back, or right fielder when he gets back, I'm kind of okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I'm kind of okay with that. Now, I still would like them to go get somebody because I think Palacios is best used as a utility guy. I don't know if he's going to start. And frankly, considering the injuries he's had, I don't know if his body can you know, maintain starting every single day. I don't know. It just it hasn't seemed that way so far. So I don't know. But I feel better remembering now that Palacios hopefully is only going to be out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, let's fingers crossed that he makes a quick and swift recovery and then becomes the Richie Palacios that we know, grinding out at bats, getting lots of walks. And I think I have a lot of faith in Palacios with the short porch.
Yeah.
I have a lot of faith in Palacios with the short porch. I think there's a breakout waiting to happen from him.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see. But for now, for the next couple of weeks, I think it's the Mangum and Meisner show, Eminem.
I agree. Eminem. Ooh. There's a shirt. There's a shirt.
There's a shirt.
Eminem. There's a shirt.
Speaking of shirts.
Oh, man, it's almost too easy. Want to know where you can get some really cool shirts? Shop.rblrsports.com. All the best merch. Maybe we'll have an Eminem shirt. Maybe we won't. I don't know. The only way you'll know is if you'll go to shop.rblrsports.com, where you can get all the best merch inspired by your favorite Tampa Bay sports teams, Rowdies, Bucks, Lightning, Rays, Sun. All there at shop.rblrsports.com. Use promo code Flappy, FLAPPY, for 10% off your entire order. Shop.rblrsports.com.
Yeah, it's a new year. It's time to add a new bit of apparel to support your Tampa Bay sports teams, I would say. What a better time than the start of the season. I guess we should probably talk about last night's game real quick. Because it was a very frustrating 2-1 loss to the Rockies, which was just like, are you aware of them on Twitter, the MLB deserve to win O-meter?
I am not. Is this a bot that I have not found?
Yeah, yet? It's like a gimmick account bot similar to like umpire scorecards.
And like Will of Dawn, all that stuff.
Yeah. So the deserve to win O-meter, the deserve to win O-meter, essentially calculates based on exit velocities, contact rates, pitching performances, like how much the team actually, how well the team actually played and therefore how much they actually deserved to win. And the deserve to win O-meter calculated that, I don't know the inner workings of this, so take it with a pinch of salt. This isn't like anything official, but the deserve to win O-meter calculated that the Rays would have won that game 99% of the time.
Oh, man. I mean, I think if you just watched it, like the players were frustrated. There was one point where Yandy Diaz was like, physically was like, what do I got to do? Like, I can't remember if it was Yandy or Bilal, but it was one of them just being like, what do I have to do, man, to get a base hit, to get an RBI? There was the frustration was palpable from those guys. And, you know, it's the first two games of the season. They want to start it out with a bang. And instead, they were scoreless for seven innings against a guy who they had so many chances against, who was not pitching very well, who was giving them opportunities, and they were making good on a lot of those opportunities, but they just could not find the grass to get runs home. Bases loaded twice with no runs scored. I mean, just a brutal game to watch, pure bad luck. You could make the jokes about wrisp fails, and Rays are just like peas in a pod. But in reality, I think that was just pure bad luck. I said it this way before the show. You should have lost the first game because I think the Rockies maybe played better and put themselves in a better position to win, but their manager kind of screwed them in the first game. In the second game, the Rays deserved to win, but the Rockies played some pretty good, pretty awesome defense and got lucky a bunch, and they won that one. So I don't really feel any worse about the Rays offense. I actually feel better about the Rays offense after yesterday, just frustrated because just terrible luck.
I mean, like, let's just look at let's isolate the seventh inning. Okay. That ended up being three batters for the Rays. The first one, Brandon Lau, flew out. He hit it 106 miles an hour at 28 degree launch angle, which is like, that's a barrel. That's, if this was MLB The Show, that's a perfect, where it would go and you'd be like, yes. But just like MLB The Show 25 at the moment, that doesn't mean anything. And despite an expected batting average of 930, so a 93% hit probability. It was a flyout.
It looked like a pretty routine flyout as well. Like, it did not look as good as it actually was.
Yeah. Then Junior Caminero had a single where he just like hit it into the ground, but it had an expected batting average of, well, a hit probability of 6%. But that ended up being a single. Meanwhile, Brandon Lau's 93%, no good. Then Curtis Mead, perfect grounder, which is a contact you can make on an Wheeler show. 108 miles an hour off the bat, expected hit percentage of 51%, so it was more likely to be a hit than not. It was right down a fielder, and it ended up being a double play, ending the inning. And that is essentially how you can sum up yesterday's game in a nutshell. Even like Jonathan Aranda's double would have been a home run in 14 ballparks, which would have tied the game. It's one of those games where you go, but if we played that game again today, we'd probably win 7-1.
And the other thing that we do need to briefly talk about, I was much more mad about this yesterday than I am today. The sends were there was one egregious send of Junior Caminero early in the game off of a Jonathan Aranda double, would have been second and third, two outs. Junior gets sent, and it wasn't close. I mean, it was not close. That was a terrible send. Later in the game, I think off of a Christopher Morel, I think it was a double. Maybe it was just a single. But it was, it was a single. And Jonathan Aranda got sent from second and got thrown out. That one looked worse. He actually was pretty close. It was a great, great throw from the outfield. That one looked worse live than it did upon replay when you watch how good the throw was and how close it actually was. But you lose two runners at home, which just adds to the frustration. And if you don't send those guys, then you've got, you know, you got in one scenario, I think it would have been bases loaded, and in another one, second and third. So that also adds to the frustration. And I mean, the first one I think was actually a abysmally bad send. But the second one I think was understandable considering, you know, even though I wouldn't have sent him because I think the offense, the guys were swinging a good enough bat that I would have said, give him another shot. And also there, so many wild pitches were being thrown by the Rockies pitching staff that you may have even gotten a walk or a wild pitch for a run, but it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, this is completely anecdotal. I don't have any data to back this up, but I always feel like the Rays are uber aggressive early in the season, just to, like, test things. They like to test things early in the season and are more aggressive while they see what they're capable of. And I think that'll get better as the season goes on in terms of when to send, when not to send. But it's one of those where, you just got to shrug your shoulders and go, just couldn't quite make it work, but the process was completely correct. Like, we played a great game of baseball. It's just a shame we couldn't quite capitalize.
And you know who played a really great game of baseball yesterday? Zach Littell.
Mm.
Dude was elite. I mean, he is not the guy that has the high octane fastball, but man, can that guy pitch. There was some sequences yesterday that were just like, I mean, I don't even know what you do as a hitter. He was putting the ball where he wanted it to, had a couple of kind of bad, he had one BABIP inning where the run got scored early. And other than that, he was elite all the way through.
Yeah, really, really good. I think that was the best he's looked in a Rays uniform potentially in his whole career.
Could be.
Really good. And if that's a sign of how this season's going to go for Littell, then look out, boys. He could be getting Cy Young votes. That was really, really strong. If we were doing a batting arm of the week, which we're not because we've not really had a week's worth of games, I think we would give our arm of the week to Zach Littell.
Oh, easily. Yeah, comfortably we'd give it to Zach Littell.
And then bat, it would probably be like a toss-up between Meisner for the walk-off home run or Caminero for the past two games.
I think it's a close race between those two and Aranda. That's kind of my, that, to me, that's those two guys, Cam Narrow and Aranda, are the story of the first two games for me from the offense's perspective. Those two guys have been as advertised. Mm-hmm. And if those two guys play the way they played the last two games, or somewhere around that, this team is going to win a lot of baseball games. Because if we're getting, you know, Brandon Lau has looked pretty good to start as well. Yandy has been a little sluggish, although he has hit some hard balls, and I expect that to even out. His plate discipline looks fine. He's hitting the ball, you know, like I say, he's hitting the ball hard. So I'm not overly concerned about that, but it is something to note that he's off to a slow start. But if you're going to get the performance you got out of Aranda and Caminero and Morel too, Morel's been good to start. Maybe not bad of the
Chris window, Morel is almost a whole win. Better than he was last year. Because last year he had -0.8 FWAR. Now he's got 0.1. So that's a 0.9 FWAR improvement in just
that's
2 games.
That's hard to beat that. That's hard to beat that. Yeah. Can't argue with it.
So that's my narrative, Paul.
That's a great narrative. Let's do it. Let's
run, that. Most improved player in baseball this season, Chris Morel.
Dan's a big Chris Morel fan. She wants everybody to know that Chris Morel is amazing.
Yeah, she's hitting those perfect.
Yeah, she is. Yes, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll see myself out. But yeah, we just got to win the series today. I'll feel really good if we win the series today. I'll feel really bad if we don't, because then yesterday's game will kind of feel worse if we don't win the series. Taj making his first start. I'm kind of unsure how that's going to go with Taj. He's either going to be lights out or he's going to give up 5 over 3 innings. We'll see.
Didn't look hopefully great in spring training. Didn't look great.
Doesn't matter.
We'll say positive. We're facing Ryan Feltner, right-handed starting pitcher for the Rockies. Another one of these guys that, like, maybe he's good. It's kind of hard to tell with these Rockies pitchers. He's had like a 4 or 5 ERA the last couple of years for them. I'm not overly worried. I think we should get the win.
I hope so.
We really start the season out series. Start out with a series win, because we talked about this. I talked about this a little bit kind of before the season got started. But when you look at the way the schedule sets up for the Rays for this season, we're going to kind of get into some forward-looking stuff now that we've kind of covered the games. When you look at the way the schedule sets up for the beginning of the season, in April and May, we play Atlanta, Boston, New York, Arizona, Kansas City, Philadelphia, Toronto, New York again, Houston, twice. That's all in just April and May. But then you look at and a lot of those games are at home, because we're heavily loaded on in the home side of things to start the season. But then you look at like July and August, and you get Oakland, Chicago, Cincinnati, who's very up and down. Detroit, we don't know what they're going to be. Minnesota, we don't know what they're going to be. Seattle, Oakland again, San Francisco, you know, St. Louis, Washington, Seattle again at home, Chicago again. It's weirdly front-loaded as far as difficulty, I feel like, from a schedule perspective in the first half of the year.
Yeah.
When we're at home. And then in the back half, when we're on the road more, I feel like there's a lot of winnable series even on the road. So, you want to get – to me, we need to get off to a good start. And winning a series against the Rockies is a team we need to be beating in series. If we are not, I'm concerned. We get Pittsburgh next again. We're not going to face Skeens. So there's really no reason.
We are going to face Skeens.
Are we going to face Skeens?
Currently, the way that it's lined up, the way I'm looking at it, is in the first game, they're throwing Carmen Mlodzinski out there for the first game. But I think he's an opener for, I don't know who. It might be a bullpen game. But then game two is lined up to be Paul Skeens, Bars versus Skeens. And then game three, Mitch Keller is throwing for the Pirates, who's pretty good as well. And then against Texas, Tyler Marley's going to open that series for the Rangers. The way it's lined up, he's not great. He's gettable. But then we go against DeGrom and Kumar Rocker to face the to finish that series. So we got some tough pitching matchups coming up. So you'd want to try and take the win against the Rockies here. against a more vulnerable team. Because while the Pirates and Rangers, Pirates in particular, aren't that great, they're throwing their best guys at us.
Yeah.
So
the MLB app, I just was checking the schedule. The MLB app has Skeens and Pepio up against each other in the last game of this series. I don't know how the Pirates are doing it, but that, man, you want to talk about your premier pitching matchups. Ryan Pepio versus Paul Skeens. Even versus Boz, they're both going to be good matchups.
Your MLB app, I'm going with ESPN, ESPN's lineup. So Skeens is going to be in that series, I think.
He is going to be in that series. I was doing the math wrong in my head. I forgot that the other team started a day before us because of Steinbrenner Field, which, by the way, huge shout out to the Rays operations. Great. It looks phenomenal. It looks awesome. I have actually been to that field a couple of times. Growing up, my grandfather lives in the area, and we went to a couple of games at Steinbrenner Field when it was just a minor league stadium. Great, great place to watch a baseball game. Super excited for all the people getting to watch games there. It's not ideal. It's smaller than a major league stadium. We've heard great things from the players about the facilities, so that's good. But it's a great place to watch a baseball game. So I'm hoping to get down there to a game myself at Steinbrenner sometime in the next couple of months. But really, really impressive job from the Rays operations department to get that stadium ready in very short notice.
Definitely. It looks great. And I can't wait for the season there. I'm actually kind of excited. Variety's the spice of life, and it's quite nice to see that. Before we get out of here, because I feel like we've talked about everything, and we want to get out of here before first pitch so we can watch this Taj Bradley
Indeed.
Game. Do you have any kind of players or storylines to watch over this week other than the fact that we're facing kind of a who's who of pitchers like Skeens and DeGrom and Rocker? For me, I want to watch Jonathan Aranda because all of those guys are right-handed.
Yes.
So he's going to get a lot of at-bats, and I want to see how he does with like a full run against the top pitchers. See if he can prove that he's ready to go.
Kind of for the same reason I'm watching Morel. Because he's going to get especially with the way the injuries have fallen to start the year, and Morel's kind of got to get the run out there, who kind of platoon neutral. He's going to kind of get the run out there in the outfield. So we're going to get to see, can this guy put it together? He's kind of the linchpin for this outfield right now. If he's bad, you're kind of in a whole lot of trouble. But if he's good, then it's kind of like, you know, maybe we get a little bit of a reset on the outfield and we can maybe rely on Meisner for a little bit. We can rely on Mangum for a little bit. So, I am closely watching Christopher Morel. The thing that I've been excited about watching him so far is the plate discipline. There was a couple of at-bats in particular yesterday where he was very patient, waited for opportunities to put the ball in play or took his walks. That kind of stuff is very exciting to me for him because the big concern with him was his plate discipline and the fact that he was swinging at bad pitches and not getting the power that we expect from him because he was striking out or not putting good balls in play. If he can be swinging at the right pitches, putting balls in play to potentially do damage or taking his walks when they're there because they know about his power, that's a player you can kind of bank on in the outfield if he can perform to that level. So I'm watching him very closely, especially with Josh Lowe out now. I'm watching every Morel at bat because we kind of need him to be good.
Yeah, 100%. Fingers crossed. I think this team will go as Morel and Caminero go because they're the biggest kind of volatile pieces in the lineup where they could be amazing or they could struggle. So I think so far Morel and Caminero have looked good, so hopefully that means the team will look good as well. Yes. So we will see. Hopefully when we come back next week, we are going to be like 5-1 and all will be well.
All will be well. And hopefully when we come back next week, all of you who are watching have enjoyed and we'll be back next week. If you have watched and enjoyed, you could do us a huge favor. It's free, just helps us out, but drop us a subscribe or a follow on wherever you're consuming the show. Really helps us out. It's free. It lets us know you're enjoying the show, helps us out so much. Also do us a huge favor and drop a comment if you've got one. And one last thing I'd ask you to do is on Monday, tomorrow, check out rblr.com for the RBLR Roundtable, which is a banger article every single week. They've been bangers and bangers and bangers. rblrsports.com. Go there on Monday mornings on your, not on your commute, maybe during your lunch break. go and check out those articles. They're always excellent. There's insight from multiple different angles. I, for one, am super excited to read the article from a kind of opening day weekend, see what our authors are cooking up. It's going to be great. Go do yourself a huge favor and read that article.
Yeah, gives you tons of perspectives and is like really digestible. Like it only takes about 10, 15 minutes to read every week, but it gives you a ton of information. It's really like dense, but full of good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. And we hope that this show has been dense and full of good stuff as well. Hope you've enjoyed. We hope to see you back here next week where we're going to be talking about even more Rays baseball. It's such an exciting start to this season. The pitching's been great. Hitting, we're hoping, is going to get there. We're going to fight through the injuries, and we're going to keep raising up.
Raise up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.